Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell. DJ.
My man.
Another, like, month has gone by.
It's crazy. And I've seen your parents.
I was going to say.
You're not with your family. Like, I'm adopted now.
Nowhere to be found. That's going to all change soon. It's going to change real soon. We're going to make all that change.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, excited to be here today.
Yeah, likewise.
It's going to be good stuff. We have my man, B. Eccles. Brian Eccles.
Man, it's a pleasure
to be here, Conscious Vibe, my man.
Man, it's such a pleasure to be here. Y'all just don't know.
Yeah, we're so happy.
You know, something I've always wanted to say to you is go green.
Go white.
My man.
Go right.
For those of you who don't know, we're talking about the Michigan State Spartans.
What?
I did get that right.
Yeah,
correct.
Spartan dogs.
Yeah, Spartan dogs.
A few years apart. You're a younger man.
Fellow alums.
Chasing legends.
Yeah, chasing legends. Father, mentor, coach, developmental. I want to say this the right way. I see you as a person who's developing young minds.
Yes, that is something that I'm passionate about, man. I mean, to be honest with you, it's we don't know what we don't know, but what we learn, we excel from. So, you know, that's what I love to do.
I like that. Yeah. So give us a little bit of your background. You know, I know you grew up in, I think it was Benton Harbor?
Yeah, I grew up in Benton Harbor, Michigan, man. It's a beautiful place right off the water, man.
Now, I grew up in Battle Creek, so you got to be careful.
Is it nicer in Battle Creek?
But you got to let me roll into
it. Okay, I'll
I mean, I'll be quiet.
It's a
beautiful place, man, amongst those that live there. But, we, you know, it's kind of rough there at times.
Yeah.
You know, and
no doubt.
Especially with the difference when jobs are different. You know, we were a place where the car industry was booming for us.
It was 100%
between Chicago and Detroit. You know how that works, you know. And Battle Creek, what Kellogg is.
Yep.
I mean, it's a place with great historic history in basketball, great in sports. You know, we have our superstars like Sinbad that's been there, you know.
And, you know, Sinbad was from Michigan.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
home. That's my guy, man. And he was an older gentleman that
brothers
looked up to. Yeah,
you know that that part. I remember. I was actually at Howard's homecoming once when I was an undergrad at A&T, and we hung out. We hung out at this hotel, and Sinbad was hanging out with all the brothers.
Binati Wad is his brother's pledge, man. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Oh wow, that's not how I didn't get that. No, but no, man, it's a beautiful place, and. The same passion they had there, had coaches that they believed in me, but I didn't know anything about myself or believing in myself. You know, I was a kid that picked up a ball, enjoyed it, and had a good coach of mine said, hey, man, I see two things for you. And I'm like, yeah, what's that, coach? He said, I see dad are in jail. I said, what? Because I was running with the wrong group. You know, I was a kid that I had fun with my friends. But when we wasn't with people, they make good choices. And I would just be with them, you know, and he just.
It's your football or basketball coach?
Man, I was a basketball star.
Yeah.
You know, football allowed me to kind of, what I'm getting into is I had an edge of anger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mostly the quiet guys are the ones that's real angry, you know, but they quiet.
Know how to manage it, right?
Yeah. Yep. You know, and literally just told me.
So what? Sorry, what was your? We gotta hit this for a quick second. What was your game?
My basketball game.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to know your profile.
Yeah, what was your game?
Oh man,
I
started as a freshman in Benton Harbor High School. You're good. I started as a freshman in high school. Played varsity 4 years straight. I transitioned to football in college. I had somebody I really looked up to, had me look at it differently. You know, I was a forward in high school, maybe 6 foot, had a 43-inch vertical, scored over 1,000 points. But it wasn't until Clem Haskin came and see me from Minnesota. You remember Clem Haskin?
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, he came to see me and my buddy Corey Charles.
Judd didn't want you?
See, Judd was Indiana. He loved the slow Indiana-type game. I remember Coach Izzo calling me when I was there at State. and they were recruiting our point guard, Prentice Magruder, but he had went to Cal, and he had called me. He's like, "Hey, man, we might need you over here." And I was like, "Really?"
So were you like Darvin Ham with handles?
Man.
Charles, Charles is trying to get
breaking
you
breaking backboards.
Exactly.
I'll say, man, my game was between. I'm gonna take you back. My game was between like a little Harold Miner.
Oh wow! Okay,
Harold Miner,
a little Harold Miner, but I was right-handed, and I love the toughness of Larry Johnson. So I was
great combination.
6 foot LJ.
Man, I could.
Yeah.
I hailed all the best players. So if he was 6'6", I knew how to play defense on you.
Okay.
The ball goes up, it eventually got to come down.
Right.
When it goes up, I'm there with you.
Harold Miner was nasty.
He was tough, man. He was a tough dude.
So Handle?
Handle had a great shot. And if you want to get on the elevator with me, meet me at the top.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
You know how that is.
Absolutely.
You know how that is.
Yeah, no, I had ankle weights on.
Yeah, man.
And you said something earlier, man. Michigan high school athletics was really underrated back then.
Yes.
And I was before you, right? I graduated in 84. And to even get looks was tough, man. So it says a lot about you because there was so much talent coming from Chicago and Detroit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when you talk about the west side of the state, we were underrepresented, man. But talent-wise, you could put us up against anybody on the west side. Man.
I mean, it was those drives up and down 94, meeting in the parks, like the legends always.
Absolutely right.
You know, St. Cecilia in Detroit. I went there and played they were called the Super Friends, and it was Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Sean.
Yeah.
They were a little older than me, but I was a young dude. So I ended up playing on an AAU team.
Vashawn Leonard's from up there? He's from Chicago?
No, Vashawn Leonard's from from Michigan somewhere.
I think. I'm not sure.
Because he ended up going to Minnesota.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember going playing against them at, we were at PAL, and we were up there playing ball, and had a good game against them. They said, "Hey, man, what grade you in?" I was like, "I'm in the eighth." They said, "Eighth?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm in the eighth." So I wasn't even in high school yet. But I was playing against grown men.
Yeah.
You know, when you went to the parks, to get on a court, you had to be good.
Right.
And, you know, as a young tyke, I should sit there and try to get on the court. I walk on the court, and they'd be like, "Got it, little man." But I had to learn. I got to call a game. I would say, "Man, I got a game." "No, you don't, little man." So I started getting the biggest cat, like, "I got game next. You want to run? I'm running." "Okay, so you pick the team." And that's how I ended up on the court. And I got on the court.
I totally remember that.
Whatever it takes, right?
Oh, yeah. The older brother's like, "Yeah, no, man. No, I got next."
Right.
Oh, yeah.
My first time getting on the court, man, I had a wide open layup. I'm like, "Man, I'm about to score." And as soon as I let that ball go, this gentleman named Bear smacked it to the fence. Pow! I watched the ball, man. And everybody's like, "Man, why you block little man's shot, man?" He looked at me. I started to tear up. He grabbed me by my head and said, "Man, if he's on this court, he's going to play like
That's
us."
That's exactly right.
And he said, "Come on, let's go." And I went to work on cats. They was like, "Little man going to be bad. He's nice. He's this." I'm just playing against grown men.
So what motivated you then? What motivated you to be so tenacious? Was it your size?
Man, to be honest with you, it was all those guys that were great. But the one component that they didn't have was the education component.
Uh-huh.
You know, and going and playing them where they were comfortable. When I would go inside the gym, it was different because it was guys my age. So I'm not saying I played down to the competition level, but it was definitely different playing against a cat that just drank a 40 and out there dropping 30.
Yeah, a lot of that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we all can probably relate to, you know, there's so many cats that would be in the gym, you know, on the field that never made it to a school gymnasium where they played in front of a crowd or played for a school and then obviously went on from there. I mean, there's so much
and
of that.
You know they would have been Hall of
Famers. You know they would have been.
Not a doubt in your mind. Man.
Some of the best talent I've ever seen never played for a school.
I can name five guys.
Never
right
played
now
for one school.
Yes.
I'm talking about high school, let alone college.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right.
So how'd you transition from there to football?
Well, like I said, Clem Haskin came to see me and my buddy Corey. Corey's standing about 6'4", 6'5". I'm standing at 6 foot. And my coach, Paul Wilhite, say, you know, and this is his voice. Hey, coach, here's Corey Childs over here. You know, he turns and he looks at Corey and you know, he's standing about 6'6", so he's looking at Corey just on top of the head. He turned and looked at me and looked down, looked back up. Hey, Corey, yeah, how's things going? And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that was different. And I was like, man, but in football, I'm standing 6 foot. I'm running a 4.4. Got 43-inch vertical. And I'm a great man-to-man. It works. So let me just transition here. I mean, basketball made me a better football player because your instincts. For example, I would high point the ball like I was catching oops. Mm-hmm. So instead of running with the receiver, I would let him get a couple of steps ahead of me. But I knew I was going to get the ball because I knew how to high point it. Mm-hmm. So those attributes were the things that kind of made me stand out a little bit, you know.
Plus you had recovery speed too. So
yeah. Yeah. So, bad. I mean, it was when you're younger, you don't know what you have, especially if you haven't been around others that have.
Exactly right.
If that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
You can only go so far. And you can only go so far with what you're motivated to do. But if there's no one to direct you on that other side, you're stuck spinning your wheels. And that's kind of how I got into the whole mentoring and coaching. And because you're limited to what you don't know. Like coming out of Benton Harbor, man, you know, I had a lot of great people that was there to help me. But we were all standing in the same sandbox.
Absolutely. And they only know what they know.
Yeah.
What was your biggest wake-up call in Michigan State?
My biggest wake-up call is that I got there and the whole deal was you got to go to college. But nobody ever came back and said, this is how college is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I came from Benton Harbor. It was kind of one-sided. You know how we look at things at home. It's black or white,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it wasn't until I got to school I realized, like, man, the world is a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
People are beautiful altogether. And it doesn't depend on your demographics or your color, but the fact of how you treat me.
Yeah.
You know, I met some guys that were princes that was there just for education.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was funny. They would look like the clichéest videos they have on everything.
You mean literal princes?
Yeah, literal. So just getting out of that small sandbox allowed me to see the world from a different perspective, but also grow in a sense of using my own decision-making capabilities and being able to decipher if you're a true person or not versus what you've been told, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, demographics does not determine it.
I mean, I swear to God, I'm just about to say that's
the only thing. Yeah,
I turned over here to say it.
I know.
Scary, actually.
First thing I thought about. But it's interesting. You know, one of the things I think that is super important in growing up in urban communities, you know, the idea that college is not just an idea. Like mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just thinking about all the guys I grew up with, and college wasn't necessarily even in the conversation mm-hmm. because it wasn't a thought.
Nope.
And I think about how fortunate I was that it was a given, right?
Mm-hmm. As a plus.
Because my mom and dad had, you know, their parents had created the opportunity for them, mm-hmm. you know, to attend college in the 60s. Yes. And so by the time, you know, my parents were having kids and my sister and I, it was like, it was a foregone conclusion.
You're talking about highly educated.
Highly educated. And the idea of college was like, okay, not just college, but okay, we're going to graduate school, right? We're going to do something beyond, you know, just a college mm-hmm. education because of what you've seen in front of you.
Right.
And you think about all the people that you grew up with or were around where it wasn't even a conversation at home. The idea was, it's me. Why?
So, B, can I ask what did your parents do for work?
My mother, I love her, man. My mother has wisdom out this world. She had a sixth grade education from Middleton, Tennessee.
That's amazing.
Wow.
She literally, it was different back in the day, and she explained it to me, where they didn't have a whole lot of choices. You know, and what they're going to do. My mom ended up getting married early, had my older sister at 16, and she was like, I'm not going to raise my kids in my mom's house. So she called an aunt that lived in Benton Harbor. She moved there crying the whole time. She's never been out of Tennessee. They got there, and, you know, her and my aunt, you know, I can say this now, they forged a high school diploma, and my mama worked at a place for 30 years. You know,
I'm not mad at that.
I'm not mad at that at all.
No. You know, she just, she was like, if she said, the good Lord gave me this job and I'm going to keep it because I have nothing else to do. So an education wasn't something that was spoke. And, you know, literally I was playing sports and it was baseball. And this guy walked past me and said, hey, son, you can make money playing this. And he walked away. And as a kid, I'm like, all right. But he would show up at my games. And one day my coach, Coach Harvey said, I said, Coach, this guy is always at the game, man, saying to me that, you know, I can make some money playing this game. And he ended up telling me, oh, that's a scout. I was being scouted in baseball, but didn't know. But our team wasn't good. So in my head as a kid, ain't nobody want me.
And it makes it tough for the outside world to assess talent when you're a standout on a team at times, right?
Yeah.
That isn't a great team.
Yeah.
They may just say you're an okay, not knowing you could be a phenom.
Right.
Right. That's really tough. And some of that's just a lack of discipline and coaching. And well, you know what, man, to your point, your mom did what she had to do.
Right. Definitely.
Right. So I can forgive that. You know, I mean, that's.
And I look at that, too, in the same sense, because you grew up with that background foundation of education. I grew up with, you know, we're happy and we're grateful for what we have, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's not a lot, which you grow up with a different type of comfort. You know, the comfort for me is
great
that,
point.
You know, I grew up with a sense of gratefulness of what I got. You know, mm-hmm. if you have more, that's a blessing. If I have less, it's still a blessing. You know, I have versus have not.
But sometimes we're just a generation away.
Yes, you're absolutely
and
right.
And what I mean by that,
yep.
you know, you're telling a story about your mom. My grandmother only had a sixth grade education.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My grandfather, I think, didn't go beyond the eighth grade. Mm. He got his job right in high school in the mills, Burlington Mills, and I'm getting half his finger cut off one day.
Mm.
Never missed a day at work.
Probably did the Ronnie Lott, right?
Yeah. Oh, went back to work the next day.
Yeah.
He worked at that job till he retired.
Wow.
Right?
She tried to make it. She was one year away.
Worked, and then my grandmother started a florist, right, in a small southern town. Ran that florist for 60 years.
Wow.
Till she couldn't go to work anymore.
But we have to make it generational. Right?
So that's what I mean. It's generational, right?
Yes.
So, exactly. So it's just one generation away. Their kids were the ones who got the opportunity to go to college. Right. And then their kids, you know, my mom and dad, my dad, my mom's a different story. Her people were going to college in the early 1920s, which is amazing.
Wow.
Right.
That is.
So but my point is, we're always if we have the right opportunity, typically we're just a generation away.
Yes.
Because now the generation now is a generation that you're turning into opportunity for college and perhaps beyond that, right?
Yes. And that's with my son. You know, he's, I don't want to say he's following my footsteps because my journey was different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love his journey because there's some guidance and direction. Like, I'll say my learning lessons, because there wasn't losses for me, they were learning lessons. Those learning lessons allowed me to turn and say, okay, all the things that I did not know and the things that I stumbled over, I'm gonna make sure that you don't stumble over, but you are aware that you don't have to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you grew up differently than I did. You know, my view on life was different, kind of on the circumstances where I came from. You know, what you go through make you better and makes you stronger. But you have to be wise enough to grow from it versus that's what I know and that's what I'm going to do.
And I want to get the power. Yeah, I want to definitely get the power. I want to finish. I want, because I think there's a lot more richness in what you were able to accomplish going from Michigan State, playing in the NFL. Let's talk about some of that.
That for me was, it was quick, fast, and unknowing. usually have somebody you can go to and ask some questions. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, man, what's the next step? You know, what's I didn't really have that. You know, I got caught between two coaches. I got caught between George Perlis and Nick Saban. You know, when new coaches come in, they bring in new lamps, new couches, new everything. So just kind of got caught in that transition, and I left. I was like, man, I'm going early. Spoke with Coach Wooden at Philadelphia, talked with Coach Bill Belichick when he was at Jets. This is the first year with Bill Parcells with the Jets. And had a couple of workouts, but what was missing was really one more year of playing, but also the knowledge of what was next. Like when you're missing something, I go back to it, and I guess that's why I'm so passionate about mentoring is you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And once you find out, the door opens up tremendously because mm-hmm. whatever skill or whatever talent you have, whatever gift you have, with some knowledge on top of it makes it explode. And even though I didn't have those things set in front of me, but moving forward, like you said, the next generation, I was able to do that for my son, you know, and just the things I learned through the whole period of ups and downs, ins and outs, you know, making decisions based on emotion sometimes versus sitting back and looking at the whole picture and saying, okay, mm-hmm. this might not look right, but I need to stay the course. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know? But yeah, I mean, for me, man, I wouldn't change it because looking at the future and what's happening, if I never went through it, I would never be able to watch.
And you got
to
change everything that happened too.
Yeah.
Right. If you change it. So,
yeah.
Man, I think that's strong, man. What did you study while you were at Michigan State?
Well, to be honest, it was criminal justice. Coming out of Benton Harbor, man, I had a cousin that was, unfortunately, he was murdered our senior year. And it's crazy, 30 years later, they said it was, you know, unsolved mystery. But 30 years later, it comes out, yeah, the gentleman that murdered him. But he's passed, so there's nobody to go get.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah, named Eric McGinnis. A book called, wrote, it was called The Tale Between Two Bridges. And
I remember that book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So during that time, you know, my thought process then was that, you know, I kind of feared, but also was like, if I am one, I don't have to worry about those things that kind of come. And this was back in 93. So the thought process was different than now. And, you know, and if I was going to be one, it was going to be a state trooper right across the street from Michigan State, mm-hmm. right? So that's what I was going to do. But then I had power and was like, man, if something happens to me, who's going to be there for them? And I did about face and changed it real quick.
Yeah.
You know, and got off an education where I can teach, I can mentor, I can coach. I can give you something that you can't buy. I can give you some wisdom to tie and take and grow and overcome by knowing versus not knowing. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so deep. You got me thinking.
My bad, bro. My bad.
No, man, it's just so many different things to talk about, man. I'm sitting here thinking about how much time we have and where to go.
Yeah, he's going to be one. He's going to be one of these guests.
Be back 5 times, man.
He's going to be one that comes back.
Let me jump to something. And mm-hmm. I know Charles is right. We need to get into you know, a discussion around powers and
okay.
and that thing too. Because he could ultimately come out of there with a master's degree.
Yeah.
Right. Like, potentially if he doesn't come out early, right? Yeah. He's already got that. But let me come back. So mm-hmm. Have you given thought to the model that Lamar Jackson and his mom have as mm-hmm. far as she's his agent?
You know, I have thought about that, and there's two things that kind of pull me. One, nobody's going to love him the way I love him. Nobody's going to look out for him the way mm-hmm. I look out for him. But also know, too, that's a curse, too, because there's got to be times where I can't be dad, or I can't. I have to look at it for what it is. I have to look at the hard nuts and bolts and have to make a decision, not based on a feeling or an emotion.
Yeah.
What's best for him, you know? And I look at that, that can be tricky because you can run a risk of ruining something that's wonderful with your child.
Or even being perceived as.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Someone else may have done the same thing, right?
Yep.
But, hey, man, not that you need to listen to me, but I spent 20 years in the sports world.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to look out for your son like you're going to look out for your son. And the template's there.
And so, I say this, there's no better person to talk to than you.
So
I mean, you only know what you know.
Brother, nobody's going to look out for your son like you. And from what I can see, he's going to be playing on Sundays. And it's working for Lamar.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now, I DJ knows a lot more than I do, but I went to law school with the intention of being an agent.
Agent,
sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, and have had a lot of interactions. Penny Hardaway was actually our business partner for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And did a lot of legal work for him. I was his attorney here in town before he became our business partner. And so learned a lot along the way. And DJ's absolutely right. Even if you don't do it yourself, make sure you, I mean, you know this, get people around him that you trust and know are going to be looking, that don't have anything to gain from an opportunity to be associated. But just to frame this, Power Echols, number 23 linebacker, University of North Carolina football team, Coach Tommy Thigpen. And he said this to me more than once.
Before the season started.
Before the season started. Before I ever saw him take a snap on the field, he said, Charles, I'm telling you right now, Power Echols is the best linebacker I have ever seen play college football.
And that's he's seen a lot of college
football. Seen a lot of, and he played in NFL.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know the other linebacker that played at Carolina?
I do.
Do you know the other? Do you know other linebackers?
Yeah. He's still the best of. I say the best football player.
The best of all time. Lawrence Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah. Played at Carolina.
Yeah.
So this kid is he is, and I'm saying this because his dad's sitting here. This kid is special, man. I've seen him play probably 5 games this season, and
you've seen him live, right?
I've seen him live. I was at the Virginia Tech game. I watched him run this quarterback down. I've never seen anything like it. Chase him down to the sideline. Tommy said we talked about it that night. Knocked him clear off his feet before he got out of bounds. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh man, he's gonna get a
targeting or something like
Well, a lot of times what happens is defenders can't pull up.
Yeah.
Right.
And they slow down.
They can't pull up the quarterback or whoever gets to the sideline first. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, the flag comes out.
I think the quarterback thought he had time.
Oh, quarterback thought he had time.
I think he thought he had
no time. Game.
So when you see your son, what do you think?
I think about everything we talked about. I mean, he is literally what I discuss with other athletes, but he's my son.
Got it.
Like, for example,
that's beautiful.
You know, I told him, I said, son, there are going to be guys faster than you, taller than you, bigger than you. But I said, the one thing we'd never let happen is a man outwork us. And if you see him, that's how he plays 100 miles an hour.
Every
all
play,
the time,
every single play,
yep.
And it just blows my mind. I mean, every time I watch him, the kid does not he doesn't take plays off.
No, that
he
started.
He does not take plays off.
That started when he was 8. We were at the end of practice. That's another thing. I was blessed to be able to coach him.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of practice, you have to run sprints, right? And he was a little taller than the other kids. And we would run, but he would take in all these little bitty steps. And I'm like, why are you taking little steps with these dudes? And he was like, what do you mean, Dad? I said, you have long legs. I need you to stride it out, you know? If your legs can go as fast as their legs are, but you are
got more stride, yeah.
He did that, and it was like these kids was running steel. He was outrunning people by 10 yards. And then when he seen it, like my son reminds me when I was younger, when he gets it, he goes like this. He smiles. And boom. He just started leaving people and always wanted to be the first to win. Then I would race. I would let him get in front of me, and I'm like, you guys got to beat me to the sideline. So I'm hauling butt to try to get there, but he would make me run harder because he was just that fast. And it just, from that point on, he just listened, you know. And when he first started hitting, I was like, son, you want to run through him. You want to see him, but run through him. They done changed it now where you can't.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, and he just started listening, picking it up, and he started to see things happen. And before you know it, it was no longer a talk. It was a lifestyle for him, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, the best thing I've heard about power, again, conversation with Tommy, and then some of the things I've seen him on camera, you know, at the games. Very aware. Very aware. Very thoughtful in terms of how he talks about the game. His team, it's all about team.
Teammates.
It's all about team. Yep. But beyond that, you know, the thing that seems really impressive to me is that I hear he's like the best kid.
Yes, he is. Like an
incredible human being, mm-hmm. off the field, very thoughtful, very kind, you know, thinks of others.
All right, those are things that, I mean, that's that, why that comes from home.
Yeah. And those are things that come from home.
Those are things we talked about. Like, you know, like we've seen examples, you know, I would put on old NFL film, we see great athletes, and then you'll see kind of the demise of the athletes.
Right? I heard him in an interview talking about these older players.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does he know about those guys?
And we just sit there, man, and we were, you know, NFL films come on and we sit there and we discuss, and I would talk about the toughness and, you know, how it was really, really physical back then, and, you know, things you can get away with now you can't get away with. And the toughness is what really he enjoyed, because we really talked about how, you know, I would get hurt and just keep going, like my finger, for example, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. you know, we enjoyed it. Like I said, I would get up every day and I would go run into a truck, but I enjoyed hitting that truck. You know, I lived for it. And he kind of adopted that. Like, I like that. You know, I like that pain. I like the hard work, because playing is fun, but the work is the grind mm-hmm. to get there. Mm-hmm. So you get more enjoyment out of that grind than the game, because the game is over an hour, so mm-hmm. it's quick. Mm-hmm. But that grind to get there is excruciating, grueling, it's tough, but it takes a very mentally tough person to persevere through it, to get through. And I trained, so I remember he was 10. He was like, Dad, why is it that these gentlemen get tired in the end and you get stronger? I said, because that for me is the best work. While they're tired, I'm pushing harder. I want them to try to do what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but as they get tired and they're taking breaths, I'm getting more energy, I'm getting stronger, and I'm pushing harder. And that's how he works out. Mm-hmm. That's why when I see him on the field, for me, he's always been this guy. The world is just getting an mm-hmm. opportunity to see
yeah.
him.
Is he a one sport athlete growing up?
He was good in everything he wanted to do. That fit him. You know, baseball, he was great in baseball, but it was too slow. It didn't fit his personality. Mm-hmm. Basketball, jump out the gym, strong, physical. But it was more like, you know, when a football player plays, he's mm-hmm. making room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the game of football was something that came easy and natural for him, and it gave him the opportunity to be a lot of things versus on the basketball court. It's one dimension. You got to make a layup, a jump shot, or something like that. Here, I can get dirty. I can get just downright physical with you, mm-hmm. but also be smart enough to outwit you. You know,
6 feet, 220.
Right now he's 6 foot, 220. Yeah. Yep.
Think inside, outside.
Inside line.
Next, and in terms of like next level. Because he's going to play on Sunday.
Well, the question is
when.
It all depends on if he got a growth spurt when I got to college. I went from 6 foot to hopped up like 6'1.5", 6'2".
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not sure. He may not. But just if he continues doing what he's doing, yes, he'll graduate next year. He'll have his bachelor's. If he stays another year, he's in grad school. Mm-hmm. But we don't know if that's the case.
That's
solely his decision.
Yeah, it's how it plays out. He all ACC this year for sure. No question. I don't want to leave out your other kids, because
my daughter, True Love, she's graduating this year. My youngest, Knowledge, he is 13. He's 6'2".
He sent me some pictures of Knowledge.
Yeah, and he's chasing his brother.
He's playing with, like, it looks like he's playing with toddlers.
Hold on. He's how old?
13. You met him?
You met him? The little dude that was over? Yeah, you met him.
He's 13?
Yeah. 13.
He just turned
13. That was your big brother, man.
No, that's my baby.
Man, boy, that's beautiful, man.
And he's following his brother, man. He's one of those kids that's good, too. Like, he's got quick feet for a guy his size. He's playing tight end in junior high, seventh grade. He's the biggest seventh grader out there. You know, I had one of the coaches call me and say, hey, man, we're out here playing this big old tall kid, last name Echols. I said, knowledge? He was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, man, he's a tight end. Just scored a touchdown.
That's another reason, man. You, I'm going to say it again. Figure out what you need to figure out to handle your kids.
You know, the younger situation. Ones always, and Power's obviously.
I tell Power that all the time. You're absolutely right.
It's the young ones.
Yes.
It's the younger ones who next thing you know.
They do.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, they do.
Did either of you guys see the Steve Smith Sr. interview on Club Shay Shay?
No, I haven't Shannon seen Sharp? That one. Haven't
no.
seen that
man, one. Man, when I tell you a must watch.
Okay.
He talks about, at this point in his life, he's self-discovering things about his emotional state and the negativity that he carried into his relationship with his wife and his kids. He couldn't get off the field. He couldn't get off that mentality of growing up in Compton. He couldn't escape it. And it carried into his personal life. And he's just now understanding the source of all the anger and the. So when you brought that up, man, it just made me think about the interview, man. When I say powerful, because I you know.
Where is it?
It's on Club Shay Shay. Okay. Shannon Sharp has his own podcast. Okay. And it's a very, very good podcast. But he went deep on it, man. And it's a side of Steve Smith Sr. that I didn't know existed.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know he went to Utah, which was kind of strange from a dude from Compton.
Right.
Married early. Had the same wife since. But, you know, he talked about this transformation in his self-identity that is scary, right? He's just now discovering things that he wish he'd known at 16, 17 years old, right? Mm-hmm. As you think about yourself today, do you still find yourself transforming in ways that you're curious about?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, that transition is different. Like, I try to explain to people, when you go from a small notoriety to a large notoriety, and that becomes your identity, and when that no longer is there, I have a lot of friends of mine, even myself, that when you go back to that revolving back down to that small notoriety, there's something in you that can, I ain't gonna say breaks, but it's something in you that says, what happened to me and who am I?
Yeah, man.
Because for me, that transition went from when people would talk to me, I was always talking about sports, to know I'm no longer playing sports now. So now they talk to me. It's like, well, what do you want to talk to me for?
And that's deep.
All right.
You know, I mean, really, do you know me? Then when I would ask that question, I'm like, man, do I know me? I know me for being this. I know me from doing this. I know me from playing this sport. But who am I as a person? And that was tough, man. A lot of my buddies, you know, sometimes they turn to the bottle, or sometimes they're no longer living. And I remember kind of going through that a little bit, but I took a step back and was like, whoa, okay. Besides being an athlete, who am I as a person? I need to find out who Brian Echols is. I need to, you know, see what direction I want to maneuver in since this is no longer there. You know, but it kind of goes back to what you know and what you don't know. Because when I was in college, I never looked at it like, Brian, you can stay and go coach and boom. I didn't look at that.
Right.
Because that was never really presented to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I was there, it was never presented. So it was almost like when I was no longer in that position, I was able to sit back and say, okay, how can I help others? You know, I can only do so for much myself. I can only do so much. I can only, you know, do things that will make me happy. But what makes me happy? And that was helping others.
So, and this is blowing my mind that we're running out of time.
But let's talk about that a little bit too, because I know that you are, your work, and let's talk about your work, is helping others, helping young people, young athletes, you know, move in a good direction to make sure that they're getting the knowledge and the information they need to have, not to mention the strength, the faith, all those things that are super important. Let's talk about that. Tell me more about what you're doing there.
I mean, when you look at athletes, you look at the physical attributes first. You see their skill sets. If you see a kid running around and jumping, like, oh, man, that kid can do this and do that. And that's just a small portion of what they have to learn, because it starts mental first. You know, and I always tell kids, if you could visualize it yourself, you can achieve it. But if you don't have a goal, you don't have nothing to set after, what are you chasing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can say for myself, I was chasing what I thought it would be. I never had a clear cut sense of it. It was always what I thought.
It makes a lot of sense.
You know, so the clarity wasn't clear. So that means my vision is blurry and I'm running full speed, bumping into things,
mm-hmm.
you know. And now I look at most athletes, they have a vision and they might not have a person to help connect the dots yeah. to get there. But if I can be those dots for you until you get to that next plateau where now a person has a canvas and a brush and paint, now they can paint that picture for you and go get it. And I use my son, for example. You know, we had a vision. He at 12 says to me, Dad, I want to get a gold jacket. I didn't say to him, son, it's going to be tough or we got to do this. I looked at him and said, let's go get it. And just being that and never giving him a doubt or giving him a second guess, which that was for me. I had to second guess. Even though Clem Haskins came to see me, I wasn't thinking about how dope I was. I just looked at how he kind of turned back like, oh, he's not tall enough, because that was the conversation mm-hmm. I had with a gentleman. And he said to me, Brian, you probably should go play football because, you know, you're not tall enough. So if you don't have direction and I was a hungry kid. So I soaked up what you're talking about. Like even now when I'm around you guys, I'm like, I'm so in tune to what you're saying, because sometimes you have to learn through observation. And sometimes you have to learn just by listening. And especially if you want to become a better person, mm-hmm. you know.
And you know, rarely are we encouraged to operate with humility as inner city kids.
Yeah.
Right. Going, that's not a word that comes into play a whole lot, because it's right. hard to do that. And then bust somebody's ass yeah. on the field at the same exactly. time, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Going back and forth. And you know, we're in neighborhoods too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we used to play against y'all, so we know what bus ride in and out was like.
I know.
Like, we had to have stuff with us. I mean, if we're going to go up to Benton Harbor, it's like,
you'd be ready.
You ain't just coming in and out of Benton Harbor, win or lose.
Yeah.
So that's just how it was. But I appreciate you sharing that, man, because I think we all learn from each other. Every single day.
Yes.
I learned something from Charles every time we get together, from you when we were at Charles's home, mm-hmm. right? And we have to embrace both sides of that, being teachers and learners all the time.
Yep.
And never taking the volume up or down, just always having it up, man, and trying to do that. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's huge.
I think if you're not learning something in life, I don't care what age you are,
mm-hmm.
you're missing out.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you're really not taking advantage of the opportunity to grow from being around people who can teach you something, encourage you. You know, we've been texting back and forth ever since we met and, you know, talking to one another, trying to, you know, build each other up in terms of dialogue, conversation. That's what he and I do all the time, you know. And so it's a beautiful thing to be able to be in a community. And typically for me, it's really small. Mm-hmm. And but it's what I get the most joy out of life, is having these kinds of conversations and relationships.
Oh yeah.
And you know, lastly, man, just as far as this, starting to think more about having to always be a pillar of strength for everybody around you. And
man,
no one ever thinks you need anything, right?
You done started something.
In every room you come in, you got to be that pillar of strength. So when are you able to ever just be vulnerable or hey, I don't get it. Or it's like, that's a tough one sometimes. Well,
that's something that's deep right there for me. That's heavy on me now, to be honest.
Is that right? That.
Yeah, that's something that's heavy on me now. Because one day I said, man, I pray for so many, but who prays for me?
And we have parents and we have right or moms and right who are always, no one's going to love us more.
Right.
But they become less at times of a factor in our journey as it relates to what's next in life.
Yes.
You know, not from a love or emotion standpoint.
Yeah.
But no,
it's hard, right, man. It really is, because at the end of the day, you know, I think about this all the time, because I know, particularly as men, we want to take care of others, right? That's just part of who we are. We want to do things to make sure that those around us, our family, our friends, are all taken care of. But at the end of the day, you say sometimes to yourself, well, who's, to your point, who's praying for me? Who's caring for me? Who's looking out for me? And it's a hard thing to do, because you don't want to come off as being selfish or just thinking about yourself.
Exactly. Right. Right.
But the question still remains.
Right. I still want to know.
I still want to know. So it's one of those things. It's a tough, particularly, you know, as we get older in life and we start to realize that, you know, time is ticking. And if you want to really have the best of life, right, and enjoy it the way that you really believe you can, you want to be cared for. Yeah. You want to be taken care of in some respects, and certainly have that support system that doesn't always seem to be there or seems really elusive.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking earlier today, I got off the phone with my father earlier and said, you know, it's hard for a man to do is be good. The hardest thing to do is be good, because you're always battling of knowing what bad is. Mm-hmm. And that battle is tough. Because even when you think you do good for someone else or a person that's looking at it the same way, you thought you'd done your best, but it was wrong.
I say this way too often lately. No good deed goes unpunished.
Makes sense. Makes total sense. But no, man, I thank you guys for real. I like this.
Did we get the signal? We didn't get the signal, did we?
Well, I mean, the time is up.
Shit. Yeah.
Okay. This is crazy, right?
Okay, good. Goose eggs up there. I'm waiting on Jay to give us the whole 5 minute. We've gone digital. Well,
we upgraded. We don't need the dry erase board anymore. Look,
Jay hasn't said anything yet.
We've upgraded. We stepped the game up.
Brother, man, look, can't thank you enough.
Thank you for joining us, man.
You know, Charles is always spoken highly of you. We had a chance to talk a little bit at the house a few months ago now, but you've been a breath of fresh air, man.
Thank you for coming in and talking to us. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Yeah.
He's going to hang out a little bit today, so we'll have a little more.
Oh, all good, man.
Man,
good.
I'm about to say, he's going to kick me out already. No, man, hey, you come over here and play one game of hoop. Now you got to go.
No, man.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you, man. It's like I said, it's such a honor and pleasure to be in the presence of you guys, and just to know you're a great man. You know,
thank you, brother. Likewise.
And, like you said, you don't get it as often as you should.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you do, cherish and appreciate it. I do.
Yeah,
that's how I look at it.
Well, we're gonna change all that.
Yeah.
No. But this is. Coming from Ben Harbor, this is amazing, man. You know.
I feel you.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. This is amazing, because it's usually not this calm when three together.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.